To the workshop entitled Why Teens Abort. And we have a panel of three speakers here, and it is interesting because two of them have experienced abortion, right? And so I'd like to introduce the first speaker, and that's Wanda Franz, PhD, and is a professor emeritus in child development and family studies at the West Virginia University in Morgantown, West Virginia. She has been involved in the Right to Life movement since 1971, and she has also served as president of West Virginians for Life for 15 years and as president of National Right to Life Committee for 20 years. In 2012, she was once again elected president of West Virginians for Life. She serves as president of the Association for Interdisciplinary Research in Values and Social Change, an organization that encourages research into the effects of abortion on society. Okay. She has also served as a host for a radio program for 20 years, Pro-Life Perspective. Okay, she's married to Gunter Franz, also a PhD, and they have three children and 10 grandchildren. And our second speaker will be Karen Cross. She's the political director for the National Right to Life Committee. She helped build the grassroots base in West Virginia, and as a director of West Virginians for Life PAC, was instrumental in putting George W. Bush in the White House in 2000 with his surprise win in the state. Karen, who previously served as West Virginians for Life executive director, became involved in the pro-life movement in 1984 as a result of her own two abortions. Her story has been featured in USA Today in the video Aching Heart, Two in Life Cycle magazine, in the magazine The Word Among Us on the 700 Club, on RBC Ministry radio program Words to Live By, and various radio and television programs and newspaper articles. She currently serves as National Right to Life Committee Board as an at-large member on the West Virginians for Life Board and as an advisory board member for Labor of Love, a maternity home and crisis pregnancy center. She has three children and one grandson. Is that Jameson? Okay. Our third speaker is Mayoshi C. Gardner, who also has experienced abortion. She has been passionate about the pro-life issue since 1986, following her own recovery from a 1973 abortion at the age of 15. Shortly after, she became actively involved with American Victims of Abortion. She has been a chapter vice president and Tennessee Right to Life secretary, testified before several state senates regarding abortion's horrible aftermath, participated in a 1989 amicus brief before the U.S. Supreme Court in Hudson and versus Minnesota, testified regarding post-abortion syndrome on television, radio, and print media, and was the executive director of Abortion Alternative Christian Services for 11 years. While a student at Milligan College, earning her degree in psychology and the Bible, she began Milligan Students for Life. In response to Planned Parenthood opening a satellite in Johnson City, Tennessee, they developed a Coalition for Care, a one-stop website serving women, teens, and children in need, with links to all the area resources available for a woman in an unexpected pregnancy. She and her husband have five children and four grandchildren. They spend most of their time now in the mountains of eastern Tennessee and western North Carolina. Welcome our three speakers.
Well, welcome to the session. We're really pleased to have you here. I want to mention that you're receiving a handout that has an outline of some of the issues and the points that I make with some of the data on it so that you don't have to worry about taking notes. And I also wanted to let you know that our Association for Interdisciplinary Research and Value Social Change has a couple of research bulletins that we have put out over the years that deal with teens, and one of them is on decision-making by the teens and factors that go into that, and the other one has to do with claims of injury involved in teens and the relationship between the failure to get information from the parents and parental notice and the teens' abortion problems. So these are I have a few copies up here if anyone is particularly interested in these back issues that deal with adolescence and the topic of our program. So, when my son turned 13, he announced to us, "It's all downhill from here." And fortunately, his very negative prognosis didn't turn out that way at all, but it obviously was in response to the fact that his mother, a developmental psychologist, spent so much time complaining and commenting about the problems of adolescence and how difficult it is to be an adolescent. So, and I'm talking about the natural limitations of adolescence, not the unnatural events that sometimes occur, but just being, growing up is tough to do, and adolescence is part of that process. And we sometimes forget that because adolescents are so big and strong and sometimes taller than we are and smarter in a lot of ways, and you begin to think of them as being more mature than they really are. They really do not function like fully formed, normal, healthy adults do. They're in a state of transition, and that transition is physical, emotional, social, and intellectual. Their brains function differently from adults. And one example of this difference in recent research, they've been able to show that adolescents become addicted to addictive products more quickly than adults do. And this appears to be due to some of the factors in the adolescent brain that's going through changes at that time in the course of maturation. So we know that there are some real differences between adults and teens. Abortion, therefore, also is going to affect adolescents differently from the way it affects adult women if they have the abortion as an adult. Now, I want to add here a caveat, and this is for my whole presentation today, that adolescent functioning can extend into ages that we would normally like to think of as fully formed adulthood. In other words, there doesn't seem to be an age limit for adolescent behavior. I don't think that comes as a surprise to anyone today. Fortunately, I mean, we see a lot of examples of adolescent adults, but most adolescents do fortunately outgrow the developmental stage and move on to become efficiently formed adults. Unfortunately, we feel that there is some evidence to indicate that adolescents take longer, that their risk of having delayed development because if they have an abortion, and that the abortion may affect that process. So I want to begin by outlining some of the negative physical, behavioral, and psychological consequences that abortion can have on adolescent girls. First of all, there are the physical dangers to adolescents of having an abortion, especially that being the first pregnancy. It's a combination of the immature body and the fact that it is a first pregnancy. The girls are immature and have not yet had children. It's sometimes referred to their sexual organs as green. That is, the cervix is rigid and the uterus is very sensitive to assault. They're at higher risk in the abortion for having cervical damage, perforation of the uterus, menstrual complications, and infections that can lead to sterility. Infertility has become a bigger problem over the years since the legalization of abortion. If you look at the statistics, there's been a gradual increase in infertility problems since abortion was legalized. Unfortunately, it is these young girls who are most likely to face the possibility of a life without being able to produce a child, and therefore the loss of their parenthood. In addition, the breasts of adolescent girls have not fully developed, and they won't fully develop until after they've had a child and engaged in breastfeeding. This is a biological fact. A first pregnancy activates the final process of maturation in the breasts, but abortion then stops the pregnancy. The cells in the breasts may then continue to grow very, very slowly, which is why these girls are at higher risk for developing breast cancer than women who abort after already having had a full-term pregnancy. These girls are also at higher risk for developing cancer of the ovaries and the uterus. So those are some of the physical examples of special problems adolescents have. Second, the research is clear in showing that women who have abortions are more apt to increase their rates of smoking and their use of drugs and alcohol consumption following the abortion. This is just across the board, but it's especially devastating for adolescent girls because research shows that adolescents become addicted to such substances faster and more severely than adults do. So for them, this addiction is a very severe issue. And, of course, those addictions can lead to many other health problems. For example, women smokers are 10.8 times more likely to die from lung cancer than non-smoking women. Furthermore, abortion is a factor in 15% to 20% of drug-abusing women, and it's a major cause of the spread of HIV/AIDS. In addition, automobile crashes involving drinking are more common in women who have had abortions. Thus, the behavioral changes brought about by abortion can lead to unanticipated dangers later in their life. And third, we know that the psychological consequences of abortion can be severe. For example, adolescents can suffer terrifying dreams and flashbacks of the abortion experience. It can cause damage to the girl's developing self-image. It can lead to suicidal thoughts and attempts at suicide, and cause depression requiring medical intervention. There's some evidence that these problems are more severe for adolescents than for adults. Adolescents are in an important developmental period when they're acquiring a mature self-concept and mature cognitive functioning. They're more vulnerable to social feedback because they need input from others to help them understand themselves. And I'm going to discuss some of these factors which makes adolescents particularly vulnerable to problems following abortion. It's clear from research and personal testimony that abortion is a life-changing experience. The maternal bond with her child is a powerful animal drive. It has physiological, emotional, and an intellectual component. Bearing children and protecting them from harm is a fundamental function of women. To fail in this fundamental human calling is to change everything. For the rest of her life, the woman must deal with this failing. Her future relations with family, friends, and lovers will be different because of the abortion. And the choices she makes in life will be driven in part by the abortion that she had as an adolescent. Her way of thinking, what she allows herself to feel, the things in life that give her pleasure and pain will all be affected by the abortion. Obviously, the younger the woman is when she has the abortion, the more impact the event may have on her future, because she has her whole life ahead of her and all of those years will be affected. In addition, adolescents are in an important developmental period. They must make the transition to adulthood and to the stage in life when mature, realistic thinking and behavior are required for success. An abortion during this stage of life influences the very process of becoming a mature person. It might make the process of entering adulthood more difficult or change the way it happens. So I want to talk about this critical period and its interaction with the abortion experience. Adolescents are in a critical period for acquiring self-identity. They're learning about the kind of person they are. The girl who has an abortion must integrate that information into her personal self-identity. Complicating this process is the tendency of adolescents to have a very strong sense of dualism between their physical bodies and their inner personalities. At this age, it's possible for the young person to be aware of an internal, unique, special me being covered up by an external proper me. So they have a very strong sense of a difference between what they're thinking and feeling inside and what they're really putting out there to the public and what they allow other people to see. They express frustration that the true inner me is sometimes not given proper recognition. Hence the need to engage in antisocial activities, to goad parents and influential adults into a closer examination of the real inner me. Get over paying attention to how I behave and pay attention to me and who I am. For example, they have a tendency to excuse behavior by saying, in spite of evident bad behavior, but inside, they're really a good person. You know, I know that he does pot and he does this and he does that, but inside, he's really a good person, okay? That there's a separation somehow between what you do and who you are. When, of course, as adults, we know that's an integrated, you know, at some point, if you keep on lying, you become a liar, you know, and that's who you really are. But for the kids, these things, it's hard for them to see those as integrated. This tendency in young people has important implications for post-abortion counseling. If a teenager has had an abortion, she may be covering up this fact as part of her hated inner reality. She may perceive all of her interactions with concerned others as superficial and not allow her real inner self to show. She may struggle to maintain the separation of these two elements while at the same time desiring that they be integrated. And she may have difficulty accepting responsibility for the needs and problems of her inner self, claiming that her proper external self didn't agree to these irresponsible actions. Oops, where did I put it? Here we go. Now, on the other hand, she may perceive the abortion to be something that happened to the minor, unimportant outer self. Thus, the adolescent is in a position to ignore the importance of the abortion, since it has not touched the essential inner self. It's just what I did. It's not who I am. This attitude could produce the characteristic pattern of teens in which they appear to go through the abortion without any problems and with hardly a backward glance. For this immature person, the abortion can seem inconsequential. It's possible that the process of maturing for such a young woman will ultimately require her to accept the seriousness of the abortion experience by changing her view of herself from someone who has merely had an abortion to someone who is the destroyer of her own child. Once a girl has had an abortion using these immature ways of reasoning, she's locked into that kind of thinking. It becomes very difficult to give up the reasoning that allows her to continue the excuses for her behavior. Thus, having an abortion may interfere with the normal process of maturation into more advanced ways of thinking about problems and personal accountability. Because adolescents are learning about themselves, they're apt to be very self-conscious. They're intensely interested in themselves, and they assume everyone else is noticing all the same things they are. For example, they engage in social interactions primarily to find out how other people will react to them. They are especially concerned about what their friends will think of them. For example, they may have the abortion primarily to maintain a front for other people. And this self-involvement leads to something that's been called the personal fable. In this condition, adolescents feel they're so special that the laws of nature and statistics don't even apply to them. So, for example, getting pregnant only happens to other people. I won't have any problems from an abortion. I can beat the odds. This lack of realistic thinking becomes part of the history of the adolescent who's had an abortion. It makes it more difficult for the girl to accept some of the natural problems that grow out of the abortion. She may cling to this immature thinking to avoid facing reality, thus delaying her maturation and inhibiting her healing. The girl who has had an abortion may find it very difficult to admit to having any psychological problems. She will be inclined to blame others for unhappiness because she couldn't possibly be a victim of such problems. She may deny she has a problem or that she could develop one. If she's engaging in self-destructive behavior, she may deny that the root cause is her abortion experience. Adolescents have major cognitive limitations. They may appear to be very smart, know a lot of things, but their ability to analyze their knowledge and apply it to specific situations is often limited. For example, one research study that I particularly appreciated when it came out found that adolescents could learn all about sexual bodily function in their sex ed classes and be able to pass the tests perfectly with 100% scores. However, a majority of the same students couldn't apply this information to their own behavior. For example, in the study, they were asked when was the best time in their menstrual cycle that they would be most fertile and should avoid sex. And the majority of them couldn't figure that out. They knew all about how their bodies worked, and everybody just assumes they understand that. But then when the question was, how is this going to affect your own behavior, they had no idea how to use the information to avoid getting pregnant by limiting their sexual behavior during fertile times. Clearly, they'll have difficulty understanding the effect an abortion could have on them. They put great stock in the intentions of a person. If you've been around adolescents, you know this for sure. They excuse behavior on the grounds that they didn't mean for that to happen. Okay. Therefore, it's not their fault. I didn't plan to do that. I mean, I didn't plan that to be a consequence. So therefore, I didn't have anything to do with that because I didn't plan it. It's not their fault. I didn't mean to get pregnant. It just happened. I just wanted to have a little fun. Or, it's not my fault that I have to have an abortion. It just happened. You know, why should I'm having fun. Why should I have to pay the price for something that I didn't plan to do? Therefore, the consequences of the behavior are not her responsibility. She did not consciously decide to get pregnant. Therefore, she has no responsibility for the baby. This allows the adolescent to deny her responsibility, but it also prevents resolution of her guilt-related problems. Furthermore, adolescents have trouble anticipating future consequences of their behavior. They can't possibly understand what it would be like to live with the knowledge that they have killed their baby. They can't imagine that kind of a consequence. Even in normal circumstances, they have difficulty planning ahead for their marriage and family. It's even more difficult to imagine what it will be like to tell their future husband that they've had an abortion. And even more difficult to imagine what it's like to get pregnant and have a baby, knowing that this is not the first baby they've ever had. What will that feel like? For them to anticipate these kinds of issues is virtually impossible. Oftentimes, a woman will have regrets following the abortion and will develop a desperate need to have a so-called replacement baby. Of course, the aborted baby can never be replaced because each of us is conceived as a unique human person. But that particular baby is dead. However, the woman feeling pain after the abortion may be able to rationalize the belief that she can make up for the loss of this baby by having another one. She may seek out sexual relations with a man in order to obtain the replacement. This irrational way of thinking is especially likely in an adolescent and especially dangerous at that age because, of course, pregnancy is most likely to end in a second abortion, and if not a second abortion, in many more difficulties for the young unwed mother. So it only compounds her problems, and they're much greater if it happens to the adolescent than to an older woman. In conclusion, abortion may be more difficult for an adolescent to resolve. Women who had their abortions as teenagers tend to report feelings of being pressured into the abortion against their will, of being victimized by a lack of information and support. Because adolescents have the greatest difficulty understanding whatever information would be conveyed during pre-abortion counseling, it's not surprising that they also report the greatest stress following abortion. However, they are also likely to engage in a long period of denial after the abortion. Thus, for those seeking to heal women traumatized by abortion, it should be evident that adolescents have special needs for education and support both before and after the abortion. They need help in dealing with the effects of the abortion, but first they need help in just growing up so that they can more effectively address the pain that they're going to experience. So I'm really pleased to turn this over to Karen Cross, who's going to talk about her personal experience in light of some of this data I've given you.
Good afternoon. I'm one of the irrational thinkers. I was a teenager once, so and definitely was an irrational thinker. it was interesting as I was, I read over, Dr. Franz shared her speech with us, and both of us recognized so many things as we're, it's just an interesting thing to see. We think we're unique and what happened to me must be very different, but looking at the data and reading about and recognizing so many similarities, it's kind of, sad and frightening. That irrational thinker me was the summer before my senior year in high school was my first abortion. And really, to be honest with you, I was surprised to find myself pregnant, okay? Completely surprised. But I was an honors student. I had a life ahead of me. I was a good kid. Or so I thought. And just a second there. Come in, please. At any rate, if you don't mind, I'm going to introduce three people real fast. This is my daughter, my sister, and my dad who flew in from Bangkok. And so... And I'm just warning you guys, I'm sharing personal things. Okay. Gotcha. Perfect timing. Okay, I generally talk political. So, at any rate, it's the summer before my senior year in high school, and I'm pregnant. And I had a life ahead of me. I'm an honors student, and thought, we didn't look into any options. I went to my mom. She scheduled an abortion. Like I said, I had a life ahead of me. We didn't think of it as there'd be any consequences to this. And it was like we're getting a tooth pulled. That's what we thought of. But I'd had a tooth pulled when I was 14, and I didn't feel the same after the abortion as I did getting a tooth pulled. I began to have dreams about that baby, and her name in the dreams was Jamie, and she was this little blonde thing, but my life completely changed following that abortion. I began to drink more. I broke up with a boyfriend. I started dating someone. Every mother's worst nightmare, by the way, is what I started dating. Oh, you don't look that much like him. but I started dating him, when I got pregnant, we just go a little too far. But this time, it's almost as if I was consciously trying to get pregnant, and within 3 months after my abortion, I was pregnant again. Now, I was in the same circumstances. I'm still a senior in high school, and except that during high school, I didn't care. My sister would talk me into skipping school. I didn't care about anything. But I didn't care about it, these honors classes. The teachers probably wondered what on earth I'm doing in these classes. But 3 months after, when I became pregnant, all of a sudden life mattered again. I decided I went back to getting straight A's in school. I started eating right and doing the right things. But I hid the pregnancy. The only difference in my life with the first pregnancy and the second one was that the determination that I had, that second one, to give life to this child. I was determined. Same circumstances. But on the day I felt her kick, I remember thinking, oh, it must be illegal now because it must have legs, you know. This is the teenage me thinking. I was 17 and it has to have legs, so now it's illegal, which of course we all know is not true. Abortion was legal. This is 1976, and she could have been aborted. But my mom was good and kind and scheduled a wedding, so I was married. And let's see here. I was also married to that nightmare, every mother's nightmare. Okay, that lasted a couple of years. As I was going through a divorce and met someone in West Virginia, I was still kind of an irrational thinker at 21, and using birth control. Now I'd been married, had a child, was using birth control, being responsible adult that I was at 21, and birth control fails, and I'm pregnant again, and for many reasons felt I had no option but to have an abortion. I was involved in my church, and you know, just so many different reasons I felt I had I'm trying to raise this little baby, and I felt I had no choice but to have this abortion. I thought I'd lose my job. And life changed again following that abortion. I became suicidal. I thought I was a terrible person. I quit going to church. I didn't feel I deserved to be in church. It's a long story. I've never shared this in front of some of these guys, so this is, I'm sorry. At any rate, became suicidal. I ended up getting hit by a car, and when I woke up in the hospital the next day, realized I needed to quit drinking and go back to church and turn my life around and take care of my little girl and do the best I could with my life. And I started that. And about 3 years after that second abortion, 9 years about after the first, I began having nightmares. These were nightmares that I began to think about, you know, because of these nightmares that kind of forced me to think about my abortions. And for instance, in one particular one, I'm walking up some stairs and a lady in white is holding a Tupperware kind of container. And I asked her, what do you have? I was carrying this container, and the lady in white asked me what's in the container. I said, oh, it's my baby. And she said, can I see it? And I peeled back the lid, and there's kind of a little baby lying in muck, you know, kind of afterbirth type. And I thought, wait, he's not supposed to be in here. He's supposed to be in my arms. And she said, can I hold him? And I said, sure. And when she did, he was clothed and in diapers, and she started to walk away with him. And I said, no, I'm ready for my baby now, and I wanted my baby. And she said, you can't have him. And so she started to put him in a car seat and take him away. And I remember looking in his little blue eyes and saying, but you want me, don't you? And he shook his head no. And I would wake up from these kinds of dreams in which I'm a bad mother, a bad person, feeling terrible, and they were very vivid. And I remember telling a friend at work, finally confiding in her and saying, we need to do something for women so they don't have to do this. And a week later, somebody handed me a flyer and said to start a crisis pregnancy center, and I felt like it was from God. I just felt like I knew I had to go. I remember being there because I felt worthless as a person. I really did. And I think we struggle with that, you know, with these feelings. And it's not, nobody said to me, you horrible person, look what you did. These feelings came from inside of me. And but I remember sitting at that meeting thinking I would die if anyone knew what I'd done. And a few people know now. But I wanted to do anything at all to help women and their babies. And I have to share this. That first night, I did at that meeting, I said, I'll do anything at all to help babies. Just don't ever ask me to get involved in politics. And of course, any of you who know what I do, don't ever say never. At any rate, when I first began to struggle with this, I was bitter toward my mom. I was really upset with her because I remember thinking she's supposed to, I wanted to blame everybody, blame the abortionists, blame my mom, you know, and not take responsibility for my actions. And I was bitter toward her because I thought she's supposed to be my mother. She was supposed to protect me, you know, but she was doing what she thought was best for me. What I finally, as I was growing through this, had to recognize is that I had to take responsibility for what I had done and what I had done to her, and I put her in an awkward position. And she really did mean best. And I was able to ask her forgiveness. She asked mine, and of course, you know, we've been able to forgive each other. In fact, my mom has written what she calls Karen's mom's story, and it's just a typed up page, but it's an interesting read, and you're welcome to have one of those later. But as I've grown older, actually, my abortions over the course of my life have meant different things to me. Dealing with my children, dealing with my family, and even when my grandson was born. I have a grandson, Jameson. The best thing that you could ever imagine, okay? Any of you who are grandparents know that your grandchild is the best grandchild that ever existed, okay? That's mine. Jameson. And anyway, he's 5. And but as I've grown older, I've recognized that it's meant different things to me. And I remember when he was a baby and holding him, and he's got the most beautiful blue eyes. Don't know where he got those. But he's gorgeous, and looking into his eyes and thinking, you know, I didn't abort 2 children. I aborted generations of children. And I used to say, I'm healed. I'm done. You know, I Olivia's heard that a gazillion times from me. I'm healed. It's done. And I'm reluctant to say that I'm completely healed anymore because I'm working through things as they come. And I know that there will be a day that I'll have complete healing, but in eternity somewhere. And until then, there's still hurt sometimes, you know. It's not the same as it was when I first started struggling, but I never know when something's going to happen that causes me to have to look at it in a different way. And I've talked longer than I meant to, but I'm now going to turn it over to Miyoshi, but there will be a day that healing will be complete.
Thank you, Karen. Having worked at a crisis pregnancy center for 11 years, I've seen this, both of what Dr. Franz talked about, what Karen talked about and described, also from my own personal story, the things, again, that Wanda outlined, and it was true that when I received Dr. Franz's outline, it was going through saying, oh, yes, this was me. Yes, this was me. Oh, this happened to me. Oh, I felt this way, too. But I saw a wide variety of reactions to the news of a positive pregnancy test. And, of course, a woman's reaction will depend on her situation in life. Typically, I saw that married women were generally happy, they were pleased, while unmarried women typically were confused and shocked, as well as those who reported to be Christians generally responded with much more shame and remorse if they were single, as those who claimed no religious affiliation whatsoever responded from a position of, what will this do to me? All they cared about was me and the me focus. I want to share with you some more typical responses according to age range that we saw in the pregnancy center, but then talk specifically about teens and then how to help them in the decision-making process. For professional women, which I'm going to say are ages 23 and up, those who have graduated from college, their response to a positive pregnancy test at first seemed to be somewhat of indifference. They didn't seem to care at all. It didn't seem to bother them that they were now all of a sudden, if you will, pregnant. Some expressed shock, such as saying, well, I used contraception, as though contraception would always work all of the time. So they were putting all of their faith in a contraception and expressing shock that somehow it failed. Or they would say, well, it was just a one-night stand, as though having sex one time would never produce a child, would never produce a woman or cause a woman to be pregnant. So she would say, well, I only had sex with him once. Oftentimes there would be tears. How could this happen to me? Again, they were tears of how could this happen to me? We even saw occasionally from a professional woman joy. Even though she was single, this was joyful for her. It was a way for her to express that right to be a single mom in this world. And then, of course, there was fear of the future. What about my job? What about my career? What is going to happen to me? College-age women, the very first response that we saw in that age range, which would be 18 to 22, would be great disappointment in themselves. I should have known better. I'm smarter than that. Again, it was still very self-focused, but it was the disappointment in themselves. They were very angry. They did not want this to happen. How could this happen? It wasn't just that sense of disappointment, but also that deeper level of anger, shock, fear of the future. What about schooling? What's going to happen to my schooling? Fear of a boyfriend's support and fear of a family support. What's my boyfriend going to do? Is he going to leave me? Is he going to stay with me? What's my family situation going to be like? What are my parents going to say? The teenage girls that we saw were between the ages, what I'm going to say is 13 to 18. 13 is the youngest that we saw. And I know in other pregnancy centers, they see girls even younger, which is, for some of us, just impossible to believe that an 11-year-old girl can come in and say, I'm pregnant. But it happens. It just still kind of makes you think, really? But in a teenage girl, the number one response that she would say is just unbelief. How could this happen to me? It's that sense of not connecting the dots. As Dr. Franz pointed out, she could explain all of the biological features that were going on in a pregnancy. She knew how a pregnancy occurred, but connecting the dots to how it occurred to her was beyond her realm of understanding. She could not connect those dots. So how could this happen to me? Again, she responded in fear of her parents. My parents are going to kill me. They're going to kick me out of the house. They will never understand. I have lost my family. I'm just at a loss. Fear of their boyfriend. Again, my boyfriend's going to break up with me. What will he do when he finds out that I'm pregnant? Fear of the future. What about college? Fear of friends. That peer pressure is so strong in teenage girls. What are they going to think about me? What will my friends think? And fear of the baby. There's no way I can possibly take care of a baby. I'm too young. It's interesting that on the one hand, they can think I'm old enough to engage in sexual activity. I'm old enough to know what love is. I'm old enough to recognize that what's going on between he and I is really love. But then on the other hand, I'm too young to take the responsibility for somebody else. So again, that sense of incongruity. We also saw a great sense of denial. There's no way I can be pregnant. There's absolutely no way I can be pregnant. The test must be wrong. Again, it's somebody else's responsibility. The test must be wrong. It's not that what you're telling me is the truth and that I am pregnant. The test is wrong. They would say, I'm too young to have a baby. They would say, again, we used contraception, as if that would be the solution to everything. And another interesting factor is they would say, I'm not sexually active. Teenage girls don't like to think of themselves as being sexually active. That puts them in a category of, well, you know what kind of girls do that. You know what kind of girls have sex a lot. So she's only having sex with one partner, even though it's night after night or weekend after weekend, she's still only with one partner unless they break up and then she falls in love with somebody else and has sex with him, but she's still not sexually active in her mind. It's still that point of not connecting the dots. There were even some young ladies, depending on their family situations, that would respond in joy. I'm going to have a baby. I've got someone to take care of. I'm going to dress her up, and it's almost like this fantasy of playing with a baby doll. I'm going to dress her up. We're going to have so much fun, somebody to love, somebody to take care of, and somebody who will love me. Although if you've been around babies at all, loving you is not what they're all about. They want you to take care of them at 2 a.m., no matter how you feel. And because teens are in this phase of self-identity, as Dr. Franz pointed out, they often will let others make the decisions for them, hoping for a good outcome, not engaging themselves and not wanting to take responsibility for the outcome. Teens are easily influenced by the anger of their parents, by the manipulation of a boyfriend, and the peer pressure of their friends to make an abortion decision. They place their emotions in someone else's hands and then just kind of go with the flow and just hope everything will turn out okay. As Dr. Franz again pointed out, there's a conflict between that internal, unique, special me and the external proper me. And it's clearly seen in that denial of the proper me not being sexually active. And therefore, she couldn't possibly be pregnant because she's not sexually active. She's only had sex with this guy right now. She wasn't that kind of a girl. But the unique special me is in a unique relationship with this special, wonderful guy who would never leave her. After all, he loves her. That's what he said. And so she thinks that that is real. She thinks that is true. Unless she gets pregnant. And thus abortion is a clear escape. It seems to be at the time a good solution. That way she can hold on to her boyfriend. She can hold on to her future plans of college or whatever it is that she had planned to do. There's no problem with her parents. She doesn't have to risk being kicked out of the house or my parents are going to kill me. She doesn't have to risk any of those kinds of things. And her proper me reputation stays intact. There's not going to be any kind of a bad reputation. All of her friends are going to think she's the wonderful high achiever that she wants everybody to think that she is. However, the payoff is never worth it. Dr. Franz stated that this has implications for post-abortion counseling, and it does. Denial can keep a teenage girl from seeking post-abortion counseling. And in the 11 years that I worked with post-abortion women, we saw very, very few teenage girls. And the girls that we did see for post-abortion recovery did not have a clear understanding of the gravity of their abortion experience. They often did not even complete the abortion program, or the recovery program, simply because they didn't see the need for recovery. They didn't see how deep the situation really was and how it deeply affected them. They were very flippant in the area of how their abortion affected them. Oh, it's not that big of a deal. No, it really didn't bother me. No, it really didn't hurt me. It's not really that big of a deal. And so she would report that there were no really big problems for her. No, she didn't have any nightmares. No, she didn't have any depression. Well, I'm a little upset, but, you know, that's no big deal. To her, it equivalated almost to having acne or breaking a fingernail or not making the cheerleading squad, but it wasn't anything horribly disappointing in life. She would be sometimes one of those people who would say, well, I know I should feel bad about this, so I suppose I need to come for help. That thinking of society kind of tells me, or my church maybe has told me, or I've gotten this idea somewhere that after having an abortion, I should feel bad about this, so I guess I need some help somewhere. Or maybe a parent found out subsequent to the abortion and brought her for counseling, believing that she should feel bad about the abortion. So the parents are saying, well, I know you're going to feel bad, you should feel bad, so I'm going to take you in for counseling. Or maybe a parent took her for the abortion and afterwards didn't want their daughter to suffer any ill effects that might give evidence that something was wrong with the decision to abort. So even the parent was protecting this external proper me in their own lives. This is not to say that women in their teens who abort their children do not suffer effects. They absolutely do. but it takes a matter of years for post-abortion syndrome to develop. There was not that deep sense of regret, guilt, shame, and remorse that's often seen in older women. So how do we help teens that are abortion-minded? How do we help those teenagers that are thinking, this is my only way of escape, this is my only option? The very first thing that I would say to you is what I would say to myself every morning is check your heart. Before you open your mouth, before you say anything, make sure you've worked through your own attitudes about how you feel about a young lady who's pregnant, about how you feel about a young lady who is saying, my only option is to end the life of my child. Check your own heart. The next thing that I would suggest after you've checked your heart is to say nothing. Silence can be very golden. Silence can be a very good gift to somebody who's just said to you, I'm pregnant and I'm going to have an abortion. So silence is sometimes a very good thing to say. 55% of our communication is visual. So let your face do the talking first of all. What are your facial expressions looking like? Are you looking at her with care, with tenderness? Or are you rolling your eyes at her? Are you looking at her with sort of a dispassioned look on your face? What is your face saying? Look at her. Don't look past her. Don't look next to her. Don't look down. Look at her. Let your eyes interact with her. Move your head toward her if you need to. And sometimes we have this tendency in a counseling mode to think, I have to put on this blank slate on my face and I can't react to whatever anybody is telling me. Let your face register that shock, if that's what you're feeling. Let your face register that sense of sadness to what she's telling you. Let your face speak for you for at least a few minutes. If allowed, touch her arm. Maybe give her a hug if that's all right with her. Listen with your body. Make sure that your body language is communicating that you care about her. Don't sit there like this listening to her with your arms crossed and your body backed up away from her as though saying, I want as much distance from you as I can possibly get. I'm going to listen in appearances, but I'm not really going to interact with you. I want distance from you. So make sure that your body is communicating, I am right here with you. I'm not leaving you. I'm right here. You want to maintain that silence for just a little bit of time, not very long, for a very limited amount of time. While you're silent, while you're listening to her, realize that what she had just shared with you has possibly come from a lot of fear, and that's very precious information. What she has shared with you is a guarded treasure that you should guard. It is valuable information. And no matter the setting where you are, where she has just told you this, you've got to guard complete confidence. If you're in a crisis pregnancy center, if you're in a counseling sorts of situation, you know that the state laws require that you do hold those things confidential unless she's going to harm herself or somebody else. And you've got to abide by your state laws. But even more than that, as someone who's just shared something very precious with you, guard that confidence. Keep that to yourself. If anybody is going to do any more telling about what has just happened to her, you let her do it. And you don't say a thing. Next, after you have been silent, after you've let your body do the talking, listen. Again, listen quickly. Be eager to listen. No matter the setting, again, someone that you've met with, whether it's at Walmart or sidewalk counseling or church, wherever, listen to her. Listen to her story. Most teens love to talk about themselves. If you talk to them very long, you know that they like to talk about me, and then they'll look at you and say, oh, enough about me. What do you think about me? And so it's still going to be about them. Listen to her story, but don't assume that because she's a teenager, like every other teenager, that this is not a unique situation. It is. This is her unique situation. This is probably the first time she's been pregnant. Listen to the importance and the uniqueness of that situation right now. Treat her this way. Listen with your ears. Stay with every word. You know how some of us, when we're listening to somebody, we're thinking about what we're going to say next? Listen to what she's saying and stay with every word. She'll be able to tell if you're paying close attention or if you're thinking about what you're going to say. That communicates to her that what you're going to say is much more important than what she's telling you. Listen with your heart. Again, make sure that you're listening without any judgments. but that you're listening out of a heart of compassion and care and concern. When you get to the point where you've listened, and you've listened enough, just say a quick prayer and ask the Lord to give you much wisdom in your speech. You do not have to fix this. And 9 times out of 10, she's probably not telling you this information so that you will fix it. Okay? So you don't have to fix this. You're there to listen. You're there to offer her information. You're there to offer her help and hope and options. The power of our tongue is incredible. You know, if you read much scripture, that it says that there's life and death in the power of the tongue. Deadly words can crush, they can bring about shame, they can make someone feel defeated, judgmental, and condemn them. But life-giving words communicate compassion, tenderness, care, and they're life-giving. They're hopeful. So check your tone of voice. When you get ready to speak to her, check your tone of voice. Check your facial expressions again. Check the volume of your voice. Are you coming across to her as loud and charged and in control, or are you communicating to her by the tone of your voice that you care very deeply about what she's going through? This matters to you. Make sure that your words are gracious. In Scripture, again, in the book of Colossians, it talks about having your word being seasoned, as it were, with salt, but with grace. Well, if you look at the nature of salt, salt can be wonderful. It can bring out much flavor in food. It can be a preservative, so it can make something last longer. But too much salt can ruin something. Have you ever been at a restaurant and they didn't seal the top of the salt shaker, and you go to put a little bit on and the top comes off? Well, your food is now ruined because it's covered with way too much salt. And it's bitter. It's awful. You can't eat it. Again, with our words, are our words gracious words, or are they salty, bitter, ruinous words? Remember again your circumstances and where you are. Are you at church? Are you at the mall? Did you run into her at school? Where are you? And who else is around? Who else could be eavesdropping? Who else could be listening? Make sure you check your environment. Make sure that your words are appropriate. Acknowledge her emotions. Acknowledge her fear, her confusion, her unbelief. Talk to her as a teenager, but not as a child. Don't speak to her on a level lower than what she is, and don't speak to her as though she's a college student or a PhD student. Speak to her as a teenager. The very first thing you want to communicate to her is that there is hope. She has hope, and there is hope in this situation. This isn't the worst thing in the world. Even though she feels that way, you've got to give her hope. She needs to know that having a baby is not a hopeless situation. Always use life-affirming words. You don't ever want to say things like, well, I know that you're upset because you're pregnant. See, that distances her from what's really going on. She's going to have a baby. And it's okay for you to say that. I know, honey, that you're upset that you've just found out you're going to have a baby. Use those true and proper appropriate terms. You want to make brief statements to her. Make sure that it's empathetic and loving, and that you communicate that you've heard her without being very wordy. You can say things like, I am so sorry that this is happening. I'm so sorry that this information, that this news is a shock to you. My heart hurts for you. Whatever emotion that she has displayed, whether it's confusion or shock or fear, let her know that you've understood that, and that you see that that's what she's displaying. I know you're scared. I know you're confused. I know you're upset. Also, you can ask at a later point some open-ended questions. You can ask her, when did you find out that you were going to have a baby? Who else have you told? Do you know how far along you are? What are your options? You want to know what she's already thinking. You want to know, what is her frame of reference already? Maybe she knows all of the options before her. Maybe she doesn't. So you want to know from her, what are your options? And then you want to ask her, how can I help you today? What can I do for you today? What can I do for you tomorrow? What can I do for you this week? How can I be here to serve you? When you give her hope, you want to offer whatever help you can personally give to her. Talk to her further. Maybe you want to give her information about a pregnancy center that's in the area, and all that they have to offer for her. maybe your position is going to be to go with her to tell her parents. Maybe she hasn't told her parents yet. So you offer, would it be helpful to you if I went with you to talk to your parents? Maybe even the boyfriend. Would it be helpful if I were with you to give you that strength to tell your boyfriend? You want to also begin educating her without putting any guilt on her. You want to place the emphasis on her while at the same time holding that delicate balance of not devaluing her baby. You do need to talk to her about fetal development. You need to talk to her about her options, about parenting, about making an adoption plan. But remember that teens don't have a firm grasp on the future. And the future for her might look like a date on Friday night or the prom or what her bathing suit's going to look like this summer. Make sure that she understands that she's not alone, that you are there for her for as long as she needs to. Make sure that, in conclusion, that you, just three basic things, you always speak the truth in love, that you listen quickly with pure motives, and that you point her in the direction of further help so that she doesn't feel helpless. Wanda?
We have pretty much run out of time. I don't know if there might be one or two questions that we could answer right now, but I think we're, I know we have kind of a short day today. So thank you all for coming. We really appreciate it, and I hope that you've learned a lot about dealing with adolescence and abortion, and let us know if there's anything you need, and don't hesitate to come up and pick up extra copies of materials here, including the association newsletters, if you're interested. Thanks so much.
These announcements may have been also read in the other workshops, but just reminding you to fill up the paper that's right there in your chairs. And then there's a there are giveaway items in the exhibit booth, so we also ask you to pass by there. But of course, you have to attend the session to be able to claim that prize. The audio CDs are also available for you to purchase, and there are cash lunches sold each day on the independence level, which is in the same level as the registrations. A sample press release, which your chapter can use to promote your attendance at the convention, is available in the press office located in Potomac 2 or the convention office. We also have a photographer on hand to take your photo, and you can order prints online. Okay. So the evaluation sheet is over there, and you can leave it with Margie and with me, you know, after you have filled them up. Thank you for coming to this workshop.
Speaking of grandchildren,
congratulations. Thank you for sharing. You live in West Virginia?
Yes.
Oh, you know, I need to go to West Virginia to visit a relative whom I have never met. He's 84 years old. I think he's in Morgantown.
Oh, really? That's
Dr. Ian Gasataya. He's a Filipino doctor and an American. I think it's Morgantown. We need to make a trip there one day.
Yeah. It's only about 4 hours
from
here.
And I understand you also involve yourself in politics.
Yes, very much.
Yeah, me here, ever since I'm actively involved with the National Committee of our I have never missed an election. I always volunteer in the polls. Yeah. And I listen to TV every night. And I really would like, you know, to do fundraising because I think Obama is trying to raise a lot of money.
Are you going to be at our session this morning? When is it? 9:30 in the morning?
I'd like to listen to that.
Yes.
Is it tomorrow morning?
Tomorrow morning. Oh,
maybe I need to.
Give you lots of information about religion. There's some great speakers, Kelly Ayotte, Senator Ayotte's coming, and Congressman Trent Frames.
Okay.
So it'll be very good.
because
you're thirsty.
Okay, I'll try to be there.
Yeah.
Oh, but then,
March, is there a workshop tomorrow morning? Or General Assembly na lang siguro, no? Kasi Paco, oh.
You're such an amazing person. You really are. No, you weren't.
Yeah, but I
never got
it. Yeah, I do. There's pictures of me. My mom, she's from. I had to come on a Sunday.